The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement, and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app, or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. We have an action-packed program for you this morning. A reminder that our photo slot with Dominic Walsh for Saturday of every month, the theme is lasting impressions, something that has made a lasting impression on you. You can email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Now, so we have a very busy program. We'll be hearing how I'm getting on my journey to become fluent in the Irish language in Joe Arhor Leofachta, Joe in Search of Fluency. That will be in the next hour. You're not going to want to miss that, and you'll be hearing I'll be making a few buttons, a few mistakes, but it's a really enjoyable journey so far. And you can follow along, or you can tag along with me as well. And let me know how you're getting on. Email me, jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. We'll be talking about the UNESCO bid that Valencia are doing with Hearts Content in Newfoundland. And it's Newfoundland, not Newfoundland. That's how they pronounce it, Newfoundland, in Canada. And I met with a delegation that were on Valencia Island during the week. We'll also have a platform series episode. And this is where I spoke to Kathleen Simmons of the Camp Cordis group. Cordis means friendship, doesn't it? And they're an amazing active retirement group, so we'll find out all about them as well in the next hour. And Hannah O'Sullivan is doing another wonderful fundraiser for the Crown Centre, and we'll be finding out all about that too. But first, back in the late 1800s, the then remote Valencia Island and Hearts Content in Newfoundland played a major role in connecting the old and the new worlds for the first time, placing the two villages at the crosshairs of the emerging global communications industry. Indeed, one could say that globalization began at the edge of the then modern world, with the successful connection of the cable between London via Valencia, Ireland, and New York via Newfoundland, Canada. This week, the Valencia Island Development Company and the Valencia Transatlantic Cable Foundation, in partnership with Kerry County Council, welcomed a delegation from Newfoundland who were visiting Valencia as part of the UNESCO Heritage Project. The delegation was led by Steve Crocker, Minister of Tourism, Culture, Arts and Recreation, and also included a number of his officials and members of the local community from the town of Hearts Content. This is a return visit, as Hearts Content has received a delegation from Kerry in August of 2023. Now, the activities this week for the delegation included a tour of the many sites associated with the Transatlantic Cable Project, visiting the cable station, Foilhamerham Bay, Glanneam House and the Heritage Centre. The delegation also visited the lighthouse and the school at Chapeltown. And I went along during the week to meet the delegation. I attended a few of the workshops myself as well. I'm talking about businesses in Kerry and the relationships that could be developed between the two places. But I first spoke to Leonard Hobbs, who's chairperson of the Valencia Transatlantic Cable Foundation.
Leonard Hobbs, chairperson of the Valencia Transatlantic Cable Foundation.
Leonard, there's a very special group of people on the island this week. Tell us why they are here and who are they?
So, Joe, delighted to have them here with us this week. It's a delegation from Hearts Content, which is the small town in Newfoundland on the other side of the cable, where the cable landed when it left here in 1866, the first commercial cable. So the UNESCO project that we have ongoing here is actually a transnational project. It's been done together with Canada and Ireland, so that's what the bid to UNESCO is going to be. And a big part of that project in both sides of the Atlantic is the community engagement. So what we have going on now is a community group from Hearts Content over with us. We went over there last year in August to visit them, and now we hope this will be an annual occasion where people get together and look for common areas of common interest As we're both on this UNESCO journey to get the most out of the UNESCO project as it evolves and as it develops in both sides of the Atlantic.
And what have they been up to while they've been here?
Yeah, we took them. Well, of course, we showed them the great all the great sites and activities in Valencia yesterday. We were at the Foilhamron Bay, which is a magnificent view there out to the Skelligs, where the Great Eastern Ship left in 1865. Of course, the cable station exhibit itself. They did the lighthouse. We went to the school, which was great fun. And we demonstrated Gaelic football. We even imported two hurleys. We came down from Kildare because I believe there's no hurleys on Valencia, so two hurleys were imported, and we got them to demonstrate how to play hurling as well, the kids. So we've had great fun, and then we did a reception last night with the community. The Valencia community came and joined us, and we had, I should have said actually, with the delegation as well as the community, we have a minister from Newfoundland is here, Joe Crocker. He's a minister for arts and culture and recreation, so he's with our delegation. In fact, it's his second time visiting here, so it just shows you how important this project is to the community in Newfoundland and of course in Ireland as well. So it's great to see people like that visiting.
You mentioned the hurling, but there are similarities between the two cultures, aren't there? There's such a deep-rooted connection beyond the cable even.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's the whole essence of it really, Joe, with the UNESCO. The UNESCO is really about community, and when you start looking at the similarities and the connections, it's quite incredible. Apart from the fact that they have a funny accent, which actually has some Irishness in it, it's lovely to hear the accents there. But because it's a rural coastal community, it's very similar. You know, their interests, their challenges, their history is very, very similar to ours. So, and they're not that far away, actually. You know, they're joking today that they're closer to Ireland than they are to their capital city in Canada.
And what would be the hopes from this week then? Is it to grow and nurture this relationship that's been developed over the last few years?
Completely, yeah. So there's sort of a two-track process going on now. The UNESCO process itself is now a very formal process where the two governments engage with each other, and the county council here, Kerry County Council, engages with the Newfoundland government. So that's a process that's being followed. It takes its own time. It's a long process, and that's one track that is ongoing. And then the community track, which we're now really kicking off here today, will follow that and take advantage of it and kind of travel in parallel with it. So what we're hoping to get from today is really just a start of a conversation to look for common, for areas of common interest. Tourism is a very interesting one, for instance. Today we're looking at even some of the local businesses here that have products that could possibly be sold in Canada. So they're the kind of things that we're looking to see. What can we do to use this UNESCO process to help local businesses thrive and connect to Canada, and vice versa in the direction over here as well as building some of the social links? So we're talking about school exchanges and those sort of activities as well, to make a social connection as well between the two Atlantic communities.
Brilliant. And then the question I always ask you when I meet you on this journey that's going on with a good few number of years now, where are you in the overall UNESCO bid?
Yeah, so as you know, Joe, back in 2022, we were formally recognised by the Irish government as a project worthy of UNESCO inscription. That's called getting onto your tentative list. There's only three projects in Ireland that have been identified as potential projects to go forward. So that process now is in play, and as I've mentioned, the two governments are now working closely on it, as are the Newfoundland and Kerry County Council organisations. And as we're here today, there's a formal meeting of that process today. People have been hired, and we were delighted to welcome Deirdre Murphy to the team, so to speak, here this week, and she's now working for Kerry County Council full-time on this project. In a very short while, there'll be an international expert who will be hired to work on both sides of the project, and indeed there's structures being put in place, management structures being put in place as well now, transatlantic, to move it forward. Time-wise, it's a slow process, you know, that you have to form, you have to put an informal or a preliminary application into UNESCO. That will probably happen in the next 12 months. Then they review that, they give you feedback, then you go for the formal application. So it's a long process. You're really looking at 3 to 4 years by the time we get to inscription. But we're very much on that track and heading in the right direction.
Thanks, Minnie, for talking to me, and best of luck with the rest of it.
Oh, great. Thanks, Major. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, Leonard Hobbs there. Now let's hear from two of the delegation from Hearts Content that visited this week to Valencia Island.
Scott Andrews, manager at Provincial Historic Sites Newfoundland and Labrador.
Tara Bishop, site supervisor, Hearts Content Cable Station.
Scott, tell us a bit about your role and what you do.
Well, I'm the manager of 12 provincial historic sites, so essentially look after everything from requesting the budgets to staffing levels and management of all operations right across the whole province.
Well, and Tara, your role?
I'm responsible for the operations of the cable station under Scott's guidance. So I supervise three staff, and I do all the programming and help do all the programming and tours of the building.
And how busy are those tours?
Can be quite busy. We run a fair amount of visitors through our building each season. So we start at 9:30 in the morning and we close at 5, and there's often times that we don't sit down during the day.
Yeah. You have a lot of the old, you know, machinery, for want of a better word, there. That must be absolutely amazing to have that, actually, because everything was kind of kept intact.
So we're very fortunate to have maintained our building intact. The whole setup from 1920 to about 1965 is still visible to all the visitors who come through. So it's the whole multiplex system, which is available for visitors to enjoy and for us to able to give the interpretation of the whole story, as opposed to our sister station here in Ireland, who weren't as fortunate to hold on to theirs.
When the station closed in the 60s, it was fairly devastating here to this area. What was it like over on your side?
So to my recollection, from things that I've read and people I've talked to, most of the people in our station were offered positions throughout Western Union's operation, throughout the United States and the rest of the world. So most people chose to continue their careers in other locations. And it's not as though the station closed at its heyday. It was a very small amount of people there, and they were relocated. So it wasn't as though we were at our peak and then it shut down, and it wasn't as devastating as it would be if we were at the height of our operation. So it really didn't, it was a downward economic thing, but it wasn't as devastating as most people would think.
And that includes the women as well, who worked at the station for that period of time, which was kind of neat. And it's a really cool story, actually, because Newfoundland women who worked at the cable station ended up going elsewhere with Western Union and managing the operations of those stations in Detroit, New York, all
California.
Over. Yeah, all over.
And the cable, when it came for us, did it have the same effect as here? I'm thinking there wasn't electricity in this area, but they had it down in Knightstown, the street lighting, they had their own generators. It brought a lot of money into the area because of the knock-on jobs that were created, people working in gardens and the kitchens and things like that. Had it the same effect?
Yeah, to much extent. Hearts Content at the time was a fishing village. Mm-hmm. So overnight, it seemed like there was a growth of very well-paid, highly educated people who just moved into town. And you did have a little bit of a dichotomy between the two economic levels.
Yeah.
And some of that still carries over to discussions today. Tara would know more about it because she grew up in the shadow of the cable station.
Yeah.
But people still talk about it today.
And do they remember the cable station fondly, Tara?
There are some people who have a really fond memory of the cable station, and then there's the people who remember the us and them dichotomy of it all. But we've worked very hard in the last few years to sort of eliminate that feeling, and everybody's welcome to our station, and we've made it more of a community center so that people can come in and enjoy the things that they didn't get to see when they were... the cable station was in operation.
And the final question on the history of it, were the workers initially there, were they English coming over, or were they actual Canadians that were working there?
So when they came on the Great Eastern, anything and everything that they needed to set up shop in Hearts Content was brought with them, workers included. So they brought all their livestock, all their building materials, everything that they needed was on that ship. So they didn't hire locals until 2 years later, when they hired Samuel Scott Bailey, who's the first Newfoundlander to be hired in 1868. And we have a full collection of his letters on site that people can read as an account of his life at the station.
Whoa. Scott, what are your, is this your first time on the island here?
First time in Ireland.
Yeah, what are your impressions of, I suppose, this area, and then and what you're doing here? How successful do you think it's been so far?
It's been a huge success from our point of view, because it's really paved the way for us to work together moving forward for a UNESCO designation. Certainly an absolutely beautiful landscape. I can see why people would want to live here. History is ancient compared to what we have, but... It kind of feels like I'm home, really, because it's just so similar to Newfoundland and Labrador. And like Tara said, we welcome everyone to the cable station, and that includes our friends and neighbours here in Ireland.
Yeah.
So, yeah, make the voyage.
Yeah, because it sounds like it's a wonderful place to visit, Tara, as well.
It is. Hearts Content is a very welcoming community. Anybody who comes through always leaves with a smile on their face, and their heart's contented.
Well, what a beautiful note to finish on. Thanks a million. Thanks a million for talking to me, and enjoy the rest of your stay here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, fascinating stuff to hear the parallels between the two places. We're going to take a break. We'll hear more from that delegation after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, as I said before the break, this week the Valentia Island Development Company and the Valentia Transatlantic Cable Foundation, in partnership with Kerry County Council, welcomed a delegation from Newfoundland who were visiting Valentia as part of the UNESCO Heritage Project. And I spoke to a few members of the delegation.
And my name is Tal Serrano. I'm a town councillor with the town of Hearts Content. And I also live in the town of Hearts Content, and that's in Newfoundland and Labrador, Canada.
Hi, same as Tolson. My name is Clarence Brown. I live in Hearts Content, Newfoundland. We're here to view the UNESCO project, the joint application between Valentia and Hearts Content, Newfoundland.
Clarence, what are your impressions? Is this your first impressions of the island? Have you been here before?
Yes, I was here in 2019, did a tour, a bus tour actually. I think it was 7 or 8 days or whatever. And it was incredible then, and this trip is amazingly incredible. Mm. Valentia is a beautiful place. There you have so much to offer, and what we're looking at is in our small little town, we need businesses. You guys have businesses. We have the museum, which is just like it was in working order in 1965 when it closed down. So you need our equipment, but we also need what you have in regards to the services that are provided in the area.
Mm. Yeah. Tell us about where you live. What's it like?
Well, I was originally born in Placentia Bay, Newfoundland, and got married to a lady from Hearts Content back in 1981. So we've been married now this year for 42 years. So as I said, I started going down there 43 years ago, whatever it was. And I fit right into the community. Myself and Tolson played hockey together with the Hearts Content Cables. Yep, so that's incredible. And, you know, if you ever have the opportunity to go to Hearts Content, you'll be very impressed with the community and the area.
Similar to here?
Yes, when you look at the culture and the branding of what we have, what you guys have. And I was telling Tolson there a little while ago about some of the things that you see on TikTok now. And there's a lot of Irish people on there that are aligning themselves with Newfoundlanders. And there's Gerardo McGraw. He's in Newfoundland right now doing tours, singing, right? Yeah. And there's another guy on there, I forget his name, now Holden is his last name. And he's really connected. He's telling stories about Ireland all the time. And then he discovers the connections between Newfoundland and Labrador and Ireland. And, of course, all the people came from Ireland with the great potato famine. So this guy, somebody sent a picture to him. And we had a singer back in the 60s and 70s, a guy, John White. And this guy's like his twin. Like, it's amazing. It's amazing, you know. So the culture and everything that we have, like, it's phenomenal. And, you know, when UNESCO happens, you know, I'm sure there'll be lots of people traveling back and forth all the time.
Brilliant. Tolson, tell us about your involvement in this group as well.
Well, I came to Ireland just to do a trip back in 2014, myself, my wife, and my brother and his wife, and my daughter and her husband. And I was amazed that, because I worked in the Hearts Content Cable Station from 1991 to 2016, I retired last May. I was a custodial worker at the building. And I taught the world of the situation with the landing of the cable and the time and effort was put into it by Sawyer Field and the group. And I was amazed to come over and see it. And when I got to Ireland, I talked to a lot of people on the way. But when I got there, I met a guy by the name of Anthony O'Connell. And he touched my heart. his drive and the goal was to get UNESCO, and I hope and pray we can do it for him and all of us.
A real dynamic individual.
He was
a goal getter.
He was a real goal getter. He was, in my mind, another Cyrus Field.
And the centre over, the visitor centre, how busy is it? How interested are people in the cable story?
Well, they're quite interested. We have people there. Like, I've worked there, like I said, from 1991 to 2016. I've seen people from all over the world, and the interest is now more than ever, I think, has grown due to this UNESCO thing as well. And I think it's going to be a big thing when it's accomplished.
Yeah. Do you think we're kindred spirits, the two communities? There seems to be like ready-made friendships out there, just, you know, when people are mingling and everything. I suppose we have that shared heritage and shared culture.
Well, there's no doubt. Like I said, I was touched by the first time I was here in 2014 to now. I feel like I'm home.
Yeah. And you do a bit of farming back home, do you?
I do, and as I noticed when I came here in 2014 to now, I do a little bit. I raise sheep and goats, and here I see a lot of sheep and a lot of not so many goats, but cows. My God, beyond, and a few horses and stuff like that. I'm really amazed at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you'll come here and do a bit of farming.
Well, if not farming, certainly be back again.
Yeah. Very good, Clarence. How successful do you think the last few days have been in getting you on your journey or on your goal?
I think it's been very successful. There's been a lot of great opportunity sessions that we had, that people learned a little bit more about things. And of course, there are first application to phase one is pretty well done. So when you look at what we do and what we're trying to do and what people have to realize, that UNESCO is going to be a win for just not our communities, Valencia and Hearts Content. It's a win for the world. It's a win for Canada. It's a win for Ireland. You know, Canada has 22 UNESCO sites. Newfoundland and Labrador, with the addition of Hearts Content, will have 6. So, and I think Valencia will add 4 to your area. So, you know, it's going to create everything. It's going to help tourism. It's going to help everything for regards to employment and people and immigration. You know, we need more people. We're age challenged in most municipalities that are around, so not just in Hearts Content but here as well. So you know, it's all good.
Yeah. And were you affected with immigration, or have you been like this neck of the woods has been?
That's a good question, but I know I think in the last year we've received 4,000 immigrants from Ukraine and those areas, and we're trying to attract people. Like, if you look at the landmass of Ireland, it's got 81,000 square kilometers. Newfoundland's got 110,000 square kilometers. You have 5.1 million people. We only have 540,000. So we got lots of room for.
You mentioned, I suppose, about the cable station, and ye kept everything intact, which is a bit different from this side. So what do ye have? What kind of memorabilia have you?
We have everything from 1876. There's two sections to the cable station in Hearts Content. It's 1876 and the 1918-1919 section. It's basically just like they left.
Really? So you've Morse code machines and everything like that?
We have practically everything there, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Gentlemen, I won't keep you much longer. It was a pleasure meeting you this morning and again this evening. And I know you're enjoying yourselves, but thanks a million for coming over, and continued success in this wonderful adventure.
And thank you, and look forward to seeing you again sometime.
Thanks. Thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my chat with those two gentlemen there. And that was actually in Glanleam House. What a beautiful house that is. Of course, it was the old residence of the Knights of Kerry that were the landlords of Valencia Island at the time, and built a lot of the infrastructure on Valencia Island. Were responsible for Knights Town, called after the Knights, the slate quarry, the churches on the island, and the lighthouse, and so much more. Now we'll take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, the delegation from Newfoundland who were visiting Valencia as part of the UNESCO Heritage Project, they were led by Steve Crocker, who's the Minister of Tourism, Culture, Arts and Recreation. And I spoke to him about the importance of the delegation being on Valencia Island.
Steve Crocker. I'm the Minister of Tourism, Culture, Arts and Recreation for the province of Newfoundland and Labrador.
Minister, thanks a million for talking to me. We spoke a few years ago when you were here last. What are your impressions this time around?
Well, I've had more time on this trip, and just to experience the community here, the opportunity here, the tourism industry, because one of my portfolios is tourism, and to see the great product that's offered here in on the island and in the surrounding area, and how much how that interacts with the economy, and I guess in a lot of ways how a UNESCO designation will change the future of the island, I think, no different than the cable changed it over 150 years ago. So, yeah, I think there's tremendous opportunity. I see a lot of similarities between Hearts Content or rural Newfoundland and Valencia. And, it's quite impressive to see the focus on building that economy and building the economy on a foundation of tourism and what tourism means today, but also the idea of tech. And Ireland is, I think, seen by most people around the world, or certainly in the industrial world, as a leader when it comes to tech, when it comes to innovation in the way of communications. So, yeah, it's very impressive.
Mm. How important was it to bring community groups and people from Newfoundland and your side of the water to here? Because I attended a workshop this morning and it was a great kind of sharing, and that face-to-face, you can't beat it.
No, absolutely. It's extremely important. A little under a year ago, a delegation came to Hearts Content and we did a very similar thing and talked about the opportunities and how we work together. And to bring the Hearts Content delegation, the government delegation from Newfoundland and Labrador here this week, also gives us that opportunity now to see, to see this experience, to see, we have our cable station manager with us, and now, she'll be able to go back and tell that story in a different way. Because if you think about it, in the mid-1800s, there was a connection. But really, that's all it was. Because other than hearing voices or code back then, in the original time, there was no... The connection was real, but it wasn't real because, there were people thousands of miles away. So the ability in today's world to understand that, this is a joint application. And I one of the things about this is when this project does conclude and becomes a World UNESCO Heritage Site, you're going to have to go to two continents to actually visit this World UNESCO Heritage Site. I think it's unique and extremely impressive.
Mm. As well as the UNESCO bid, I suppose there's a lot of shared heritage and culture, isn't there? And that even comes across, I know you had a few sing songs in the pub the other night, and there was Irish songs and songs from your side. They're very similar. And the people are very similar as well. We did an online event with the Transatlantic Cable during COVID, and it struck me, the similarities of the two places was amazing.
Oh, the similarities are extremely amazing when you stop and think about it. We have portions of Newfoundland and Labrador, the southern part of the southeast part of our island is very Irish, very, very, very Irish, and it dates back obviously hundreds of years, and so many people from Ireland settled there, and we see it today. The dialect is very, very similar, the place names. We have a street in St. John's, Newfoundland, it's George Street, and it's the most famous bar street in Canada, and it probably has more Irish bars than the Temple Bar area. It's based in Irish music. We have great bars like O'Reilly's, Shamrock City, Broderick's, and they all celebrate an Irish heritage.
How do you build on the last few days going forward?
I think, it's about completing the application. It's making sure, it's tremendous cultural benefit, tremendous cultural asset, but the economic asset cannot be understated. And I think that's what we need to do now. We need to move into building that asset so we create the economic situation for businesses to grow. I've had the opportunity today to visit some local businesses and see, the opportunities that the UNESCO Heritage designation will bring, And it's just so many opportunities. And, you know, rooted in culture, rooted in heritage, but at the end of the day, what it can do for the economy. I had the opportunity yesterday afternoon to visit the elementary school on the island and see, you know, 50 children, that these kind of things can bring a future of living in a rural part of a country, no different in Newfoundland and Labrador, giving children the opportunity to choose where they live. We don't necessarily need to live in cities anymore. And I think, you know, the pandemic proved that, you know, we can work remotely. And I think this is one of the things that, as a Canadian, I look at Ireland and I see your commitment to connectivity, because there's so many opportunities and so many opportunities for young people in the future to be able to live in places like Valencia and rural parts of countries. So I think it really brings tremendous opportunity. And, you know, if you look at the cable station here, you know, they're going to turn the upstairs into an innovation incubator. And what a better place to be, you know, you think about what it was over 150 years ago and what it created, and it can create it again.
Finally, and it's brilliant that you mentioned Scoldararca, because I understand there might be projects between the two schools, you know, on either side, which is absolutely amazing. Finally, though, the UNESCO bid, how confident are you that it'll get over the line, and where are you with it?
Listen, I'm extremely confident it'll get over the line. I think it's a no-brainer. You know, where else could you celebrate what it actually was? It's the foundation of the World Wide Web. Very confident. And, you know, as a government, we're extremely committed to seeing it happen. And we see the same commitment here on your side.
Brilliant. Well, enjoy the rest of the evening. And thanks a million for talking.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a really interesting project, isn't it? The way the two communities are now joining up. And it's very interesting to see how it's developing over the years as well. And we look forward to seeing how that progresses into the future. Now, the Ballybunion Arts Festival is on from Thursday 18th to 21st of July. It's a festival that's going from strength to strength. Marion Relihan, one of the organisers, was on to me to remind you that they have an Irish poetry, an English poetry and photographic competitions. And the closing date is the 30th of June. And you can send your poetry to poetrybaf@gmail.com. And all details about the various competitions are on ballybunionartsfestival.ie. That's ballybunionartsfestival.ie, 30th of June there. So you've just another couple of days if you want to get your entries in. So check that out. If you're a poet or an aspiring poet or photographers, we've many photographers and poets listening to this program. And like I said, the photographers get in touch a lot with Dominic Walsh's photography slot with the first Saturday of every month. Now, we'll take a break, and after that, we'll be hearing from Hannah O'Sullivan. And then in the next hour, we will be finding out how I'm getting on my journey in search of fluency to become fluent in the Irish language within a year. And we'll also have an episode of our platform series, and we'll be featuring Cordis, which is an active retirement group in Canada.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now we're going to hear an interview I did last week with Hannah O'Sullivan from Port Magee. Hannah has been on this program a few times. She was involved in our TY Learning Waves course, and she did a great job on that, where TYs came in and worked in radio for the week and presented a program. And she also has done a lot of fundraising for the Cran Centre. And the Cran Centre provides lifelong solutions for children, adults and families living with neurophysical disabilities. And Hannah has a very close relationship with them, and she has fundraised for them on numerous occasions. And she is having another fundraiser Saturday the 29th. And it's a walk and roll going from the Kerry Cliffs in Port Magee to the Skellig Experience Centre, which is just across the bridge then on Valentia Island. And Hannah's fundraiser for Cran is on the Just Giving page, and the link is on her Facebook page too, which is Hannah O'Sullivan. So sit back, relax and enjoy this. Tell me about the Cran Centre. What is it?
So the Cran Centre provides group-based services and also one-to-one supports to people with congenital physical disabilities, progressive physical disabilities and acquired physical disabilities. A congenital physical disability is a physical disability you are born with, such as cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, spina bifida. And then a progressive one is a condition that kind of progresses over time, like multiple sclerosis. And then an acquired physical disability is like a stroke or a spinal cord injury. So, you know, there's a broad spectrum of people with different needs. And the Crown Centre would provide, you know, social activities, which is what I'm kind of involved with, like social club and drama group and stuff. And then for the parents, they would provide a parents' cafe where parents can meet up and share similar experiences. And then sibling workshops for the siblings, and like play therapy and counselling and reflexology and, you know, different things like that as well. And the family aspect of it is what the families love, because a lot of places, you know, it's just focused on the person with the disability, whereas this service provides support to the family as well. So it's a wraparound service. So
yeah,
it's quite good.
Yeah, and I remember last year when you were doing the fundraising, was it a special playground they were making at that time?
Yeah, so they actually opened. So they opened their inclusive playground on the 2nd of July 2022, and they actually put a lot of work into that in a very short space of time, because construction for that only started in July 2021, and a lot of volunteers gave up their weekends and stuff to do the building, and it cost 500,000. So, you know,
wow.
They were looking to get the funds so quickly as well, and that's all thanks to the public, because the Crown Centre get very, very little government support because they're still being established, because they're only 6 years old. So
yeah, it's amazing. And tell us yourself, how did you get involved with them first day?
So I first got involved with them throughout COVID. It was actually quite an ideal for me, because as we all know, in you know, COVID caused a lot of challenges, a lot of social isolation. So that kind of broke down a lot of that social isolation for me, because all their activities went online. So I was able to join a lot of the groups online, like the art or, you know, play-doh making or yoga and stuff. And it was just great, because obviously we were off school and, you know, there wasn't the social integration from that either. So yeah, it's great.
Where are they based and where do they serve? Do they serve the whole Munster region?
Yeah, they do serve the whole Munster region. They serve people in Cork, Kerry and all across Munster.
Very good. So tell us about the fundraiser you are doing, and you want everyone to get involved. So tell us about it.
So the fundraiser, so this is my fourth fundraiser for the Crown Centre. So in 2021, I started doing a fundraiser called Walk and Roll, and it's doing 5K your way. And I've raised a lot of money in the last couple of years, and I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who has donated, you know, both this year so far and over the last couple of years. You know, me and all the other families do really appreciate them, and the Crown Centre always wish for me to pass on their message of thanks as well, because, you know, it gets put to great use. And as I said, the Crown Centre get very little government support, so, you know, it's a lot of what keeps their services going as well, and helps them provide new services.
Yeah. So your fundraiser then, what's going to happen?
So I'm going to do like a walk from Kerry Cliffs in Port Magee to the Skellig Experience Visitor Centre, starting at the Kerry Cliffs at 12:30, and then we're walking back to the Skellig Experience in Valencia, and Jersey, the musician, is going to be there, and he's going to play some music, and we'll all have a bit of crack, so that'd be good.
Brilliant. And if people want to donate, how can they do that?
So the Crown, you can, if you want to find out more about the Crown Centre, you can look them up. So it's CRANN, and then they have a general giving page as well. So, and anybody is welcome to join, the more the merrier, and yeah, it'll be a good day out.
One of the most scenic walks you'll ever take in as well, the Kerry Cliffs.
The Kerry Cliffs rival
the Cliffs of Moher.
That's what a lot of people particularly like about, you know, the South Kerry area and stuff. There's a lot of scenic views and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. You'll be starting the Kerry Cliffs, you'll see the Skellig Rocks coming down, yeah. You'll see Bray Tower and walk around.
And hopefully some sunny blue skies as well.
Yeah, definitely, please God. So, once again, what time is it starting from Kerry Cliffs?
It's starting at 12:30 at the Kerry Cliffs.
Very good. And it's all downhill, that walk, so it's a nice easy walk. Anyone will be able to do that.
Yeah.
And then people can roll along as well, like you said, which is brilliant, yeah, as well. So it's for everyone.
You can come along yourself if you like.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think I will. And we'll make off the Skellig Experience, so it'll be a fantastic day. Absolutely brilliant. Well, Hannah, we wish you the best of luck with it. Well done. You're involved.
The opportunity to speak. And I'm grateful for having the opportunity, because it's a great way for me to spread the word about the Crown Centre as well. And, you know, just to let more families know about it as well.
So. Yeah. You're a fantastic ambassador, because you always speak so eloquently about them. But as well as that, you're raising the profile and raising much needed funds as well. But for now, Hannah, thanks a million for coming on and talking to us.
Million.
Yeah, Hannah O'Sullivan there, and it's taking place, the fundraiser, next Saturday the 29th at 12:30, starting at the Kerry Cliffs. And if you want to donate to the fundraiser, you can go to the Just Giving page, and the link is there, or it's also on the Facebook page, on Hannah's Facebook page, which is Hannah O'Sullivan. So we wish Hannah all the best of luck with that. Now, in the next hour, we're going to be hearing another episode of Me in Search of Fluency, Joe or Hor Leofukta, and we're also going to be hearing an episode of the Platform series, where I spoke with Kathleen Simmons of the Cardis Active Retirement Group in Camp. We'll take a break for the news at 10, and I'll join you again in the next hour.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now we're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement. I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. It's time for another episode of My Journey to Become Fluent in the Irish Language, Joe or Hor Leofukta, or Joe in Search of Fluency. And it's been an interesting journey so far. And there is a few buttons, there is a few mistakes now when I'm speaking here, but that is part of the journey. So I hope you'll enjoy this episode. Gaeilge is a compulsory part of the school curriculum for primary and secondary school students in Ireland. But once they leave school, the vast majority will rarely speak their native tongue again. I'm Joe McGill, a presenter with Radio Kerry, and I own a brewery in the Gaeltacht region of Iarrachaig in South Kerry. My wife Mags and mother Marianne are both fluent, or LIFA, in Irish. Mags would have done all her schooling in Irish, and Marianne went to West Kerry Irish boarding school, Cláiste de Ida. Irish was not spoken in my home, and this has been a great regret for me, as like many before me, I finished my schooling with only broken or brished Irish. I'm now determined, going forward, that Irish will be spoken in my house. To do this, however, I need to become fluent myself. And so, I have set myself the challenge to become fluent in Irish in 1 year. Well, can I start too? Tá mé go ma, I'm fine anyway. I'm continuing on my Irish language journey. And I suppose you were probably wondering at this stage, what are we in now? This is mid-June. I started mid-March. That's April, May, June. 3 months in. So 3V I'm in. And it's going all right. The start was great. I was full of enthusiasm. I found a few weeks ago there I kind of hit a brick wall because I didn't do anything for a week because Tommy on a Gnohuk. I'm very busy at the moment. So I have the brewery, I'm teaching radio. I, by program, we do documentaries and all that as well. So Sasaurig or in the summer, I'm on a Gnohuk. I'm very busy. So it's trying to juggle everything. But like I said before, I travel up and down to Tralee a good few numbers of days from Port Magee. So there's a lot of hours in the day there, and that's where I've been making use of the time, listening to Irish with Molly, who you would have heard on previous episodes, and I'm getting on all right. But I was doing one episode, when was this, a few days ago now, and we were learning the difference between the oh God, Leshgill. What's the Irish for sneeze? I must find that out. The copula and the bee. And the copula is basically, it's pretty simple, but it frightened me at the start because I was like, oh, this is too much like school again. So it reminded me of that. But it's basically the difference between nouns and adjectives. And an explanation of this would be if you were saying, this is a man or that is a man, you wouldn't say, Tashe far, he's a man. You would say, is far a, he's a man. That's the way you'd say it, is far a. So it's a noun. So then you go, is far a, because it's a noun, because you're talking about a man, like a woman. You wouldn't say ta ban e, you'd say is ban e. So I figured that out. And I think that's, I have to do more of that, where I have to kind of, you know, get the keys to unlock something, figure it out, because that's the way I kind of learn, is I have to understand it. I don't like this learning, you know, phrases off by heart and things like that. It's more about learning it. Now, you're probably hearing I'm inside the van again, and that's where I said I learn a lot of Gaeilge. And I'm actually here in Drumid, the Paróiste of Drumid. Now, Drumid is in the Gaeltacht region of Iuvrahoch. So again, this would be an Irish speaking region. The Gaeltacht in Iuvrahoch would not be as strong as West Kerry, because in South Kerry in Iuvrahoch you have a kind of a fragmented Gaeltacht. So you're in Carsafine, you're not in the Gaeltacht, even though there is talk stepping a service town. Then when you go to Port Magee, you're not in the Gaeltacht, but then you travel to the Glen, you're in the Gaeltacht, Ballinskellig, and you come out of it then, you know, heading towards Waterville, but into Drumid, then you're in the Gaeltacht again, and out to Cardaniel, you're in the Gaeltacht. So it's just kind of broken up. But I'm heading to the house of Mike O'Shea, Michal O'Shea. Now, Michal would have spoke Irish always. Rogagagas Tóg O'Shea, Drumid. And he was born and reared here, so he would have spoken Irish a lot. Now, he has a great voice as well, a great accent for the Irish language, and that really comes across as well. And you, if you listen to the Saturday supplement, you'd hear Mike a lot. If you listen to Radio on the Gaeltachta, he would speak on that a lot. He's a great man for history and for local knowledge as well. So I'm very much looking forward to visiting him. He invited me over to the house to speak a bit of Gaeilge, but I'll also find out, I suppose, how important the Irish language is to him. So we're nearly at his house. Connach me a hock, I think. I could see it there in the distance, or a connick around the hill. So I'll be there. A gone or made. So we'll talk to you again then.
Well,
you're not starting so far.
Tommy, go on,
go on.
No,
that's too late.
Yeah, if you could be him.
Tom Brown, or I'm Tommy, then,
up. Yeah,
An bhfuil héas a bhailte?
Íl bíl an fér, sir. Tess a dhúr gint a gomara íl. Gint skirt a seasca bíl an... ...diamáat, ma dín diamáat.
Mihal hoi sé, Mike sé, I'm known as Mike, Mihal hoi sé.
Mihal, gura maha gut. I'm really looking forward to this Oglev interview. I had to ask you beforehand because I run a made the road. I forgot. Mm-hmm. So Ruga Kogas toga to an art show. Yeah. And Vito a kind gakla Gaelga.
Well, Greg V. Gaelga Magalorgan Savalia, I guess not a horse could he school master Gay Scott National to master Ski. The Shulamakurian school, Jagasan, Timogamil Gillet, Flukagas trim, Bastak, Niravan, Niran, or Hill Rolagin, Shugri school, and Skolchini Master Gihe, Toga, Biana Gorta, Octio da Hadashakt. So Michel Dennis Ogier, the Kaharer, Bert. Buchligas per Kalini se clown Sean Tach Kailke Marf Mary Agus Brady as mission in his oge so for mission Javier on Jackton hand down to Kahavan so
see I understood every bit of that now yeah. And I some Irish I'm listening to and I can't make head nor tail of it yeah. But I don't know is that because I'm from here you're from here maybe yeah. You know but I understood every bit of it that you went to school here that you were the youngest of four yeah. And all the rest of it yeah. So did your parents both speak Irish and were they both from here
they were my both parents they I don't know why they had plenty Irish and plenty English. My mother was only from 2 miles down the road.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in the community here in Dublin, because I spoke about this, I spoke in the car on the way over here, and I was talking about how fragmented the Gaeltacht is in Ivrahag compared to West Kerry. So, like in the community of Drummond, when you were growing up, would neighbours, what's the Irish for neighbours?
Why am I forgetting?
The Corson. Would they be a kind Gaelge?
Could my dear, a kind Gaelge? Vi afrin gael 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 agus vi afrin bier le gael. Vi an sagar cúnta fada Harrington ta ar Harrington dierhan vi an afrin as gael 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 every second Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah, dierhan gael an bilogan son tvoas agum nor vi sanal tóar.
So no Latin, nor the Irish.
Well, vi nor hos kudinal tóar de vi an Latin dierhach ime he. Alfa get o me get nil chilin me da Latin ta gumsa. De vi st eg a fólum ak nir vi an afrun ime kudi bierlegas ka elkin eg naum shein.
And what about outside of mass? Like, so mass was done through Irish, but what about outside? Would the neighbours start talking to each other and ask
you see, when they come out from mass maybe 3 or 4 sentences in Irish they are and then maybe divert English maybe
why
I don't know
was there a shame around the Irish language or something what was it
I can't explain I make out that it is when they were going to school that they had such a hard time that they blamed the Irish language for it they blamed the teaching system that they just sit in the school anyone that left school
yeah.
They just sit in it I think
but you were going around farming here we speak to each other in Irish
we, sometimes yeah. You see the Irish and uncles they come in like my mother like come in like we'll just say we were complaining that the dinner was cold maybe the food was cold and Laura Sheehan's son is going to it's all come bullock not kehige it's a bad belly that won't warm it like if we fail someone fail or hurt themselves or something big share it's a force it's a Irish out blue like that he'll be all right before he get married
yeah.
Like you see the Shanuckles came in all the time
but then we were talking just before we started about you know implements in the farm or maybe places in the farm yeah. Where you'd use the Irish language so can you give more home like, give us a few examples
An raung agus an píke an kapal vi jabba vi gomsa agus an kapal agus an tassal a hort agus dal gwyl yn wogtar lang dal gwyl to the Kremlin bainne na kerka yfwg a hort ysdiach jabba na byg mar sien dal gwyl yn gardin bydd agus bwchiad prath i hort ysdiach chyn jabba na vi gomsa No, that doesn't go in the Mowan, winter Mowan, change job, whatever you're going to be built in the back better graph, my Glashland, back tour, the McShisher, back me Hollywood, winter Mowan, and job of you come Santina come out of shorts for taxes in Vimahara, carving tobacco, carving paper. I was talking near the Kipini, near Gowan Gomak, and just last frontier near my din. I was come out for a shoulder and laugh hard. And so that job about a piece of Jewish back there, I guess the care hands of her and Tina come out of Lassa, if I can lie.
How long partak or?
Take a share of born, so the neck of the boy.
Not near the Tetlan that
came out. Which was Nietzsche Wad on
World War II?
Nietzsche Wad on Archie Hitler, the Lamille.
Okay, not fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were saying as well about like a chain around the neck of the cow. You'd an Irish word for that?
But you see, no, the Sarah Henning, the slow reached out the chains, this the Rodin Wimster, this the Cronabar, and Rodder Aguetra and Tear the Curtimple and Bow and I Bride on. Bride on, could bride on and Bow, not a ride the Bow, not in the Bash Jack, the Vish Soccer, near the Vian, Aglan the Bag, and Ocean, the Vidagarian, Qun. Agus nirvian aglo rvenia nirvdar fien wild mar nors na nani ven lehant isho a cwrn braid an ar an bad I cwni le cangl I gwrn I hir.
Are you more comfortable speaking Asperla or Askelga?
Askelga. Yeah. It comes to say, I wouldn't have great confidence.
Yes.
But you see, I'm doing two things now. I see, I'm thinking in Irish and trying to convert to English, and I'm afraid they will make a mistake. You see,
and do you always think in Irish? You always think in Irish?
I do, yeah. You would always think, and then you see, you'll say the Irish word, and I don't know, you'll go, yeah.
And isn't that a thing about speaking language anyway, though?
Yeah.
Is confidence. It's such a huge thing, I find.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm trying it a bit more with you now because I feel more comfortable with you.
Yeah.
But where if I met a stranger or something and I had to speak it, I don't think I'd have the mishnach.
Yeah.
Munin is it? What's munin then? Is
confidence and mishnach is confidence. Munin is, well, just much the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's Mike O'Shea or Mihal O'Shea there in Drummond. We'll take a break and we'll return to that episode after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now let's return to the second half of that episode. Joe or Hor Leofachta, Joe in Search of Fluency, where I'm speaking to Mihal O'Shea in Drummond. How has it changed in your lifetime people's appreciation of the Irish language? Because I think from doing this, there seems to be a lot more people trying it or talking about it or using it than, say, years ago. Like they talk about it being dying out, but I'm saying, say, in the 90s now, for instance. I think it's more popular now than then.
Yeah, way more popular. Now, they went through a phase of that people were kind of, I don't know what would you say, that they weren't in. But now they realise that with the phones and people are stuck in phones and they have no conversation, that if this Irish language, you know, all those Irish sayings are gone, it will only take a generation to lose it. If the old shanokas that I have there, that runs to me from the occasion arises, if they are lashed, if I don't write them down, they're gone. Because the young crowd just looking for ones, and the after conversation is gone anyway.
Mm.
You're not going to house now, which is no one talking to each other. Mm. It's a shame.
Yeah.
But
I think what's a shame is actually that, you know, you have to speak English here to me just in parts because it's poetry out of your mouth when you're speaking Irish.
Yeah.
Because you have a good South Kerry accent as well.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to learn the language, is that when I heard people, real Irish speakers now from this area, when they speak and the way they, you know, they can get around words, we're made for the Irish language, really.
Once we learn it, once you like swimming or driving a tractor, once it came in, once it's in the system, it's there for good. and like to the small bit of a bit of a touch up, they don't keep it live. Like we see, we have Reading the Gaeltacht now, to the great help, mighty help. Like the sell, oh yes, all the different, you have the Munster Irish, then you can listen to the Connacht Irish in the morning, and you can go to Donegal up and from 11 until 12. So you have 3 dialects.
And can you understand all those?
I can.
No problem.
No problem. No problem. You see, in here, Damara the Grav Dinibanov, Tiktor and McGarrett, Big Shea, Big Din, Big and Din, a Thor of a Nook, Yehidir, the Yino Shea, good Nai, Arashak, the Hook, the Kadermi, Aka, in Nunaga, will get before a Farah, or Shak, good in Nai, Farah, and we said Thor.
What does that mean?
Far as the week, there's anything that's there, yeah. And like they definitely have different things they do, you know, up the west of Ireland. Like Chucka Wilto, and even I remember I done an interview with Martin Tomcarney in the Dáil Chóra, and he said Datak, when we were talking about the bees,
because even the Gdimer Tati or whatever they say to say how are you doing or whatever, and like I'm learning kind of a recording and I'm listening to podcasts and things like that, be me instead of beg me, do you know, like
you see the we were again come out this pale urban snakes is a carol world is coming good in the come out this pale after the humor sheer good year trust goes down she good little more is the humor staff was shook a bug
you know, when I'm a kind to you now and then it may batoon maybe, does that annoy you? You know, if I make a mistake speaking to you, trying to speak?
No, not at all. No. Should Tatana have some good to you and go to again on the earth? Neil Toy Magafoom, you're not only missing me, you're Tatunari, you're serious about your job.
Yeah.
Yes, my lum, the machine, the guinea and the earth and the air, couple of focal. And Chakton Chakhtar and Chakton or the Sarn Chakhtar we may Howlish and Kerry Cove she and O'Sullivan the Homer Sos the Knocked Stricky in the Nakhile Kerry's cottage I said Kerry Gerfad we had a dog in
Colcahar Mayfane I think
all in there taking the water or there the school or there when you call Cahar you call Cahar no call Cheshire second
not call Cahar so sorry could be Thror or Cahar
Cahar is first
right so what's
and
it could be third or fourth
second.
I was making him closer to me than he was. And you know the school over here, Mags, Mavankela, Muna, as you can see, and Muna, you know, like Gaeilge, Coral, like conversational Irish.
Yeah.
So that's something that wasn't there before, you know. So I think that's important as well.
You see, Tashishin Taktuk, what's what they say, Tadina, Tevamudan Gaeltacht, the Sanchi, so Gaeltacht, Tadagur, Sesquelavani, so Kafir, Chamsurtas Nadinishin, I guess more could the Nadinishin, the Lanishin, better than I will, and Gaelgin, Tishmahori, better. Atele, a handyish tax counter. You don't need better Navalian, better Gulen. I had no one counter, better Gulen Mahero Kuntele. So, like,
not like your Tishmori who were like,
So, Norvis Dignat, Norvis Oak, Nirvian, Vinamana, on near better Kupu, she
counter Kena or same
thing, and Paroshikian, sure, like near better near Hani Movara. Couple of meal, chin and made us most talk a handy ban, you know.
Yeah.
So shouldn't have been the good and Gael because not tradition one again.
Yeah. And do you have a lot of Dina to a lot of people to speak to in Irish?
Tara, I imagine me how hell used to go to clear. You know,
We're out of time, but do you know what? I hope that I'll be able to visit here a bit more, and you'll have the kettle better, huh? And we'll be a kind Gaelga a lot more.
Pounds and so on.
I say miles though instead of kilometres.
I guess we got 12 inches is a foot, 3 foot is a yard, 5.5 yards is a pitch. That fatty perch is a furlong, and yet furlongs is a mile. That was the English of what I rattled off before that. And the way it's done was she owns a yoke pound for start. She owns a yoke pound, 16 ounces a pound.
Get
a pound to clock.
14 pounds is a stone. I live enough now to learn the Irish without trying to learn the conversions. you just remind me of Dahi O'Shea's father, Mike Denny O'Shea. When we were in Ballantaggart House when I was only 15, say, in transition year, we were inside there. He was a kind to us Gaelga all the way through. He was telling his story, you know, Hignat Titterm, the book we were going to be studying for the Leaving Cert, but he told his story and we understood him. It's the same. I can understand you now speaking Irish. I would say I've understood 90-95%, which gives me great confidence going out the door. So thanks a million, Fred. Along Mishnakar.
Every little thing counts. Balian gak brab, like if gahim bal askel gerish. Hanicha kolief rash kum balian gak brab bert.
Yeah. Well, the kun of day that I will be leifa loyal fadrug next year. But goramahagot and thanks a million.
Yeah.
And kiran kittler bera there. Kiran
kittler garu.
Garu.
Yeah. Tasha bera.
Tasha bera. It's already boiled.
This is before.
I'm learning all the time.
Ah, well, sure. Once again, I'm here.
Well, now, sir, I'm leaving Mike's farm and his house there now. And, I'm buzzing. I'm buzzing. But hasn't he wonderful Irish? And the way he's able to explain things as Gaelga and tell stories and everything. And we only heard half of it there. I was talking about the place names around here and the meanings and the old Shanuckles. He described loads of them. And there was so much knowledge in those Shanuckles as well. They weren't just sayings. They were like teachings to teach people about, you know, the next generation about things, which I thought was very impressive. And I wasn't being disingenuous when I said I was a way more comfortable trying Irish with him there now. And, you know, even though you know you're getting it wrong, but you don't care because you're like, you know, you're getting carried away in it, you're swept up in it. And that's a great feeling. That's a great feeling to have. He would have made a great teacher, I tell you that as well. But I'm definitely going to visit Mike again, I was saying there to him. And, you know, we'll talk more about his love of the language and all that. But I really enjoyed my visit, and it has given me a lot of
enthusiasm for the Tauki, the future. So I'm going to keep at it now and imagine this time next year that, you know, when I'd be visiting Mike, that we'd be full blast Oscar, I guess, speaking away. Wouldn't it be absolutely wonderful? And that he'd be able to understand Oscar as well. But it's amazing to hear, you know, he's thinking in Irish as well, speaking in English. So, yeah, that was fascinating to hear again. But anyway, on we go. And we're still on my journey to become fluent within 1 year. We'll see when I get there. Yeah, that was another episode of Joe Ar Chóir Laoghaire, Joe in Search of Fluency. And if you are on your own Irish language journey or you want to ask me anything about it, you can email me, jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. And I want to thank Mike Shea for his contributions there, which were absolutely excellent. We'll take a break, and after that, we'll be going to camp to hear from the Cordis Active Retirement Group.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, as part of the platform series on Radio Kerry, funded by Cumasú na mBan with the television licence fee, and this time we're in camp, and I met with Kathleen Simmons, who is the chairperson of the Cordis Group, which is an active retirement group based in camp.
I am Kathleen Simmons, chairperson of Cordis Camp, which is an active retired organisation based in Camp Village.
Kathleen, thanks a million for welcoming me here to the beautiful village of Camp and the beautiful surrounding areas. I don't get to come here that often, so I'm delighted to have the excuse to come over here. I won't need an excuse in future. I'll just nip over here. Tell us about the Cordis Group. How did it first start? 2020 was when it started. A precarious time.
Yes, 2020. Very bad timing on our part. We grew out of an ICA group that was really an active group and didn't do any of the craft work, so we moved to an active retired group, and we could also include men then, which was an attraction. We started in 2020 in January, and we operated for 3 months until COVID came, and then we had to close down. We had started with a bowls group because when we had been an ICA group, we had worked with the college in Tralee, the IT, and they had taught us how to bowl, and we liked it. So, and we also thought some of the men in the area would like it, which turned out to be true. So we had 3 months of bowls, and then everything shut down. Now, we also had a walking group in the ICA. We kept the walking group going during COVID. Obviously, we were walking separately and following all the rules and everything, but we did get out and we walked and we had picnics and things like that that kept us going for a year. I think probably towards the end of 2021, we started back bowling in the hall in camp, because bowls, you can be quite separate from other people, you know. We and at that time there was a relaxation in the rules for COVID, and then of course 2022, I think everything went back to normal. Not quite sure of the date
on that, and because I think this is important, the time you're on about, how important was your group to especially that age group as well? You know, they were kind of treated like with kid gloves almost, and you couldn't do anything. Yeah. So how important was your group getting people out and about and interacting socially?
It was very important. We could get out and walk because we, as you saw today, we're in a lovely part of the country. We could always go on the beach and up on the hills, mainly on the beach really for older people. And it was really important. You know, you could bring your drink with you and you could chat at a 6 foot distance. But yeah, it was great for older people, particularly. It hit everybody, but it hit older people more, because as you say, we were almost cocooned in our houses, and unfortunately there's still a few people around, older people around, who still aren't out there really doing things, and that's something we're working on. We're trying to encourage everybody to come out, and a lot of our activities, we've increased our activities, but a lot of them end up either in a cafe or somewhere where we can have a cup of coffee and a chat. So even if people aren't able to do the exercise part of the activity, they can always join us for social interaction.
I think that's vital, something you said there, because I don't think it's discussed enough, the post-COVID era, that people kind of have developed new routines, but maybe not the best routines, where they actually, they're kind of used to not having to go to something or go to an event or go out, and they've kind of got happy to be staying at home, but are they really happy after? So that's, I think that's vital work you're doing there.
Yeah, well, we feel it is, and we do put a lot of effort into it, yes. Since we started with the bowls, we have developed further into, we now play pickleball, we play in the hall in the winter, but we've just started our summer season, and we actually play on two outdoor courts at the school in Castle Gregory, the secondary school, and we have people from Castle Gregory join us as well, and that's great exercise, and it's a quite different activity when it's outdoors. I can't really explain it, but it's not quite like having a picnic, but it's just very pleasant.
Yeah, it's the fresh air, you're out in nature, yeah.
And less competitive, I think.
Yeah, there's that more hot air could be left off.
Yeah.
Now, what is pickleball before you go on? Right. Because there's people at home going, what's that now? Is it a ball they dip in pickle juice or something? What's pickleball?
Pickleball is a sport created in America. Quite a long while ago, about 1960, I think, but it's only really getting popular everywhere now. It's a combination of table tennis, and badminton.
Oh, that's the fastest growing sport in the world, yeah. I think, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Jürgen Klopp, the Liverpool manager, was playing it there, I said, one day, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
I didn't know that. Maybe you'll come and visit us. Yeah. It's a great exercise because you can play it seriously, you can play it very seriously and very competitively, you can play it just seriously, or you can play it for fun. We have people in our group who do all those different things, categories.
And that's important too, because just because people are getting older, the competitive spirit is still there for people, and there isn't a real outlet, you know, competitive sport as you get older. So that's important, I think. I know it can get too competitive maybe, but I think it is important to keep those competitive juices, flowing, and something to meet that need.
Yes, it is, there is a need to measure yourself, I suppose, in a way. Now, we also, when I say we play outside in the summer, we also lose some of our members because we have a few people who play golf, and they disappear in the summer. We don't see much of them. So pickleball and bowls, we also have an exercise class for older people, which would be more into flexibility and weight. We use weights, strength training, and balance issues, which are the big issues really with older people. If you can help prevent people having falls by improving their balance, you know, they'll do much better in life, and we all know that we all lose strength as we get older, so you need the weights to try and build your strength up. We also have table tennis, and we have started a mental games activity. So we play board games of different sorts. Now that's more a winter occupation, really. We're not doing too much of that now.
Just for the mind, keep it
active. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, we have our walking groups. So we have one that is much more energetic, and they go up the mountains and things. And we have one that's less energetic, and we walk just mainly flat paths. Yesterday we did part of the Greenway. We drove to Spa and joined the Greenway and walked out to Phoenix, had our lunch, and then walked back.
I wouldn't be able to do that. Tell me this then, in the line of membership, have you many members, and where are they from? Kind of what backgrounds? Are they from everywhere, or are they from this locality?
A mixture. We have probably about 45 to 50 members of our own group, and they would be from the local area, I suppose primarily from Camp, but Camp is quite a wide area. Some from Castle Gregory, and some from Tralee, and we have one person from Phoenix, I think. Now we are part of the Active Retired Ireland movement, which is a national body. They have about at least 500 clubs across the country, probably more now. You pay €12 a year, and that covers your insurance. You pay that to them, that covers your insurance. But you can then go to any club in the country. So if you go away on holiday, you can go and attend sessions at the club near you there, or you can join other clubs. When you can go to other clubs, you just join the one club in the area. So here, when we play bowls, we have people from club in Tralee, we have people from Ventry, we have people from Cork, the Cork people when they're on holiday, and we have, there's probably about 20 bowls clubs around Killarney and Tralee. So often we just have members coming to play a session with us. And it's all covered by the same insurance. So it's very flexible. And they also run seminars and things for to help people when they're aging. There's another group in Kerry called Shankada, I don't know if you know of them, who work with older people. They run information sessions. They also run a bowls network. So we're part of that league, and we play matches with the other clubs. We have a match today in the hall.
Brilliant.
This afternoon. And the Active Retired, I should mention as well, they run a national bowling competition which has been held in Glen Eagle in Killarney for the last couple of years. That's in December, and that gets clubs from all over the country. I think they have about 70 teams enter that. We go there and play.
And what is bowls? I've seen it, but like, how does it work? Is it like trying to move, you're rolling a ball along the ground, is it to hit another ball in at the end, or close to another ball? How does that work?
Bowls, it's the indoor version of what has been played for years, what they call in England crown bowls, crown green bowls. But obviously inside, you're not doing it on grass. You have a mat, and the mat is 40 foot long and 6 foot wide. You have a jack. A jack is a small little yellow ball that is placed at the end of the mat, and the aim really is to get your balls, the one who wins, the team that wins is the one that has the most balls closest to the jack. But that's how you start off when you're beginning bowls. But you realise once you've done a few competitions that the other team aren't going to let you just put your balls near the jack. They will knock them out of the way. So it becomes quite tactical, which we didn't learn for a couple of years. We thought we were doing very well getting them onto the mat and near the jack, but then we realised that there's a lot more to this than that. As I say, it's very tactical. And it's great fun. And we've found the people who play bowls to be in the network in Kerry, where we mix with them a lot. They're extremely nice people. They're very agreeable, very helpful. And there's people in their 90s playing. So it's a wonderful exercise. It's very good because you're bending down, but you're not doing it in a stressful way. You're doing it in a pleasant, fun way,
yeah,
really.
Not sudden jerking movements or anything like that.
We started a club in Tralee last year. Now that has got enough members, it's set up on its own now, so we actually have a neighbouring club in Tralee.
There'll be a bit of rivalry so going forward, which is great. And finally, not totally finally, but Cardus is the name of your group, which means friendship. And I'd imagine that there have been many friendships formed since 2020 because of this new group.
Yes, both within our club and with other clubs in the area that, you know, we've met people, particularly at competitions or seminars, workshops about health that we've been to. We've met all sorts of people. And another thing we do that I didn't mention, we do day trips in the summer as well. Mainly just groups in cars, because it's a lot of effort organising a coach. But so yes, we're a lot of friendship. And in the winter, well, any time of the year, if the weather's not pleasant enough to go for a walk, we'd meet up and just have coffee or have a social chat. And most of our activities end up in a cafe somewhere, because the social interaction is nearly as important as the physical activity. Mm.
And it's so important, reducing social isolation, which is a major issue in rural areas like in Kerry. And finally, if there's someone listening to this now and they want to get involved with you, or they want to show support in some way, how do they get in touch with you?
Right. We have a Facebook page called Cordus Camp. Very simple, open to anybody. It's a public group. You can message us through that. You could ask people in the shop in camp. They'll point you in the direction of people. You can contact me by email, kathleen.simmons@gmail.com. Or you could come to the hall, the sports hall, on a Thursday, 4 to 6, we play bowls. 7 to 9, we play pickleball. On Saturday morning, we play pickleball as well, 10:30 to 12:30. So you could catch us then.
That's brilliant, and that's great. It's so open as well. Kathleen, it's an absolute pleasure meeting you and hearing all about Cardus. I think it's a fantastic group, just hearing all the different things you do. It's very active retirement, I tell you that. But well done on setting it up at an important time as well. I think it was at a vital time he set it up. You might have thought, oh my God, what the timing was awful. It's actually, I think, the timing was brilliant. So, Kathleen, thanks a million for talking to me, and best of luck and continued success with Cardus.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I want to thank Kathleen there, and what a wonderful group Cardus is. And we wish them all the best of luck in the future. And it's part of the Platform series on Radio Kerry, funded by Commission O'Man with the television licence fee. We'll take a break, we'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, next Saturday is the final Saturday of the month. That means it's Frank Lewis with another wonderful programme. So stay tuned for that from 9 a.m. I'll be back the following Saturday. And we will have our monthly In Focus photography slot with Dominic Walsh. The theme is lasting impressions. It can be something that made a lasting impression on you. It can be something that makes a lasting impression on you. It can be a thing. It can be a place. It can be a view. It can be an animal. It can be a person. Or it could be a photo you took years ago of something that made a lasting impression on you. You can email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. That's all we have time for on the programme. My thanks to Alana Diggan, who was on sound this morning. And Francis Jones is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks' time. Until then, look after yourself and take care.